LinkedIn News.
We learn emotional skills through play when we're growing up. We learn physical skills, cognitive skills. And I think the problem is somewhere as we're growing up, we say, no, 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 that's not how you're going to learn anymore, because that's what kids do. But adults still learn best through play. And so I think that's something that we should embrace more in higher ed and in the workplace environment. We learn best through play.
So that's Dr. Barry Kudrowitz. I'm Leah Smart, and this is Everyday Better. Stay tuned for how and why you should be making play a top priority. Our show starts in just a few moments.
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by TIAA. TIAA makes you a retirement promise, a promise of a guaranteed retirement paycheck for life. Learn more at TIAA.org/promisespayoff.
Hey everyone, from LinkedIn News, I'm Leah Smart, and this is Everyday Better, a personal development podcast where every week I sit down with some of the world's brightest minds and bravest hearts to learn how we can improve ourselves, our relationship to others, and the world around us. This week, we're taking on the topic of play. I wanted to learn about what it really is and how it fosters creativity in our everyday lives from our offices to our homes. So I got to sit down with Dr. Barry Kudrowitz, who is a professor of product design at the University of Minnesota College of Design. He studies the connection between what he calls ha-ha and aha, and the causal relationship between play and discovery or innovation. His first book, Sparking Creativity, How Play and Humor Fuel Innovation and Design, covers the often trivialized domains of play and humor and how they can increase our creativity. So today we're exploring play and what makes it a valuable pursuit in places that may not seem so obvious. Here's Barry.
I'm really interested in creativity, so that's how I got into play and humor. I want to figure out how we can teach people to be more creative.
What is the difference between play and humor?
Well, I think, you know, all forms of humor have some small essence of playfulness to it, whether you're playing with words or playing with concepts or just being playful, like laughing, right? But it's not necessarily the other way around. Like, not all things that are playful have humor, like video games, for example, or sports. There's not necessarily humor involved. They're generally separate entities, but we tend to group them together in like this, I don't want to say like trivial stuff, but like things that are for kids,
yeah,
or silly.
Look at you,
right?
Having fun. Like, yeah. Got it. And so talk to me a little bit about the connection between humor, play, and creativity or innovation.
It's more like a web of connections between those things. And they're connected in very different ways. It's not like they're both, you know, in that same pathway. So one connection between humor and creativity is making non-obvious connections. So sometimes we call that wit. That's something improv comedians are good at that. And that's a tie between creativity and humor. On the play side, there's flow, the concept of flow, like being fully engaged in something relates to play and creativity. A sense of wonder or fantasy or being free from failure, that connects play and creativity.
So I want to switch a little bit to the cognitive benefits of play. What is happening in our brains and how does that mimic what happens when we're being playful or humorous?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, we call this like sometimes moment of insight or like an aha moment or a eureka effect where we come to some realization, right? And most people are familiar with that feeling when they watch a movie with the twist ending. So not to ruin any movies, but like...
Oh, ruin one. Why not?
I think everyone talks about Sixth Sense still,
yes,
for some reason.
How could you forget?
I mean, there's so many other movies with twist endings, but for some reason, that one, like everyone talks about Sixth Sense.
Yes.
So, you know, when you come to that realization at the end of the movie, what happens is your brain is making the connections between these plot elements and trying to make sense of what it's seeing, right? And then when it comes to that realization, wait a second, this anterior superior temporal sulcus part of your brain lights up and you're like, I'm so smart. I got it. I got the twist. Aha. But we have that same feeling like, you know, when we're problem solving something, and it could be an engineering problem, it could be a design problem, or it could be a planning an event. And then something happens and you're like, oh, wait a second, I know how to solve that thing. And you put all the pieces together. And that's the same process in your brain as what's going on when you're figuring out the ending to a movie. But it's also the same process that happens in your brain when you get the punchline to a joke. So when, you know, there's a setup to a joke and the punchline is provided and your brain is trying to figure out why this makes sense or how this makes sense. And when you get the joke, that's that same part of your brain, that aha zone. So the posterior superior temporal sulcus is the part that's responsible for trying to make connections. And then the anterior superior temporal sulcus is like the aha zone that lights up you've solved the puzzle.
You mentioned the idea of like getting the punchline of a joke, and something you've talked about is a story of the comedian product designer study that you did, the ha ha aha moment. Can you share a little bit about that? Because I loved the idea of how play and silliness relate to creative thinking.
So back when I was at MIT, this was my PhD work. We were exploring idea generation, and we wanted to see if improv had any effects on idea generation output. And so part of that study was we were testing different people's idea generation abilities in the form of like quantity of ideas for different prompts. And we tested students, designers, and engineers. And the people who were actually coming up with the most creative product ideas were professional improv comedians. They were coming up with more product ideas and more creative product ideas than product designers. So I started studying improv, like how they teach improv. And, you know, I was taking classes, but I was really like in the back, just like
taking notes. Yeah.
Like, what are they teaching here? I think it was great. You know, it was helpful. Like, I think it helped me in a lot of ways, but it was eye-opening that if you look at the skills that they're teaching for improv, it's like the same skills for team-based idea generation. It's like listening, deferring judgment, building on ideas. And that's what all of these games and these warm-up games are about. And so we wanted to see if you can get people to be more creative using those games. So we did before, after of improv training, and we found that people can come up with a lot more ideas if you do an improv workshop when compared to doing nothing or some sort of activity by themselves.
You know, I often will work with people in a coaching capacity, and one of the things you learn in coaching is part of what can help people get unstuck is just coming up with as many ideas as possible, even if they're ridiculous. So I'll be sitting across from someone and just come up with the stupidest ideas, and they'll laugh, you know, and they'll be a little bit embarrassed or a little awkward. And then soon they're like, actually, maybe I could do something like that. And you realize that maybe part of the reason they're stuck or they're not maybe in this circumstance coming up with their own ideas with a group or when it comes to work is because they aren't deferring judgment.
Yeah, it's really hard to not judge. We're kind of taught that in school. We're like, you know, don't mess up because you don't want to get points mm-hmm. off. You don't want a bad grade, right? You don't want to fail at this activity. And so we're always kind of like filtering things. But something that improv teaches is how to turn off that filter and how to say the things as they come to your mind and be okay with saying some ridiculous things. The hard part in, like, let's say a team dynamic is when one person is judging, it kind of messes up everyone because then everyone is filtering because they don't want to be called out by that one person who's critiquing other people.
There was another study that you did on creativity and idea generation that I found really interesting, which involves this concept that you called the novel tale. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, this was one of the findings from one of my studies where we tested hundreds of people with this alternative uses test. And that is where you give somebody a very common object like a box or a paperclip, and you say, come up with alternative uses for this. And a very simple way of scoring that test is you just count how many uses they came up with. So in my research, we gave that test to hundreds of people. So we wanted to see, you know, when do the creative ideas emerge? Is it the first thing you think of, the second thing? At what point do the creative ideas start coming out? And we collected everyone's responses and we analyzed how common or uncommon each response was by looking at how many people came up with that idea. So for example, if like you said, hold paper together, you know, half the people had that as a response for a use of a paperclip. And so that has a high percent occurrence. Whereas if you were like, I don't know, skewer grapes, that might have a low percent occurrence. And we took all of these percent occurrences of all of the responses and we averaged everyone's first response and we averaged everyone's second response and so on. And what you find is that the first thing you think of, 50% of the population will have also thought of that same thing. And it's not until you get to like 9, 10, 11 ideas where you start coming up with the stuff that very few people think of. That's the novel tale. And that's where you want to be in like creativity and idea generation. You want to get past the first five things because it's very likely other people will have thought of those things already.
So then in like when we think about embracing this concept at work, should we then be like creating brainstorm sessions where it's just like, let's just sit together and just brainstorm? Should we be going to improv before we have a brainstorm session or doing an improv exercise?
Well, yeah, the studies show that improv warm-ups, it doesn't have to be, you know, hours long. It could just be a half an hour warm-up is helpful for team-based idea generation. But I think some people view brainstorming sessions as not super valuable because you come up with a whole bunch of stuff that may not be useful. But it's really important to get all of that stuff out and be in a mindset where it's okay to come up with the silly and radical stuff. And so, yes, maybe a lot of it doesn't go anywhere, but you might get some really good nuggets out of that session if it is more open and accommodating and not judgmental.
So are there any other kinds of play or games other than improv classes that can help us engage in more creative thinking?
Yeah, so a lot of board games and card games have very strong connections to creativity tests. Some are so close to creativity tests that they have been used as creativity tests, like Scattergories, for example. Scattergories rewards you or scores you the same way the Torrance test of creativity scores you. So you get points for novelty, you get points for quantity of ideas, you get points for the flexibility or the variety of responses, and then you get points for elaboration. So if you have a multiple word response that has the same, starts with the same letters. So Scattergories and the Torrance test are like almost the same assessment. Things like Codenames, if you've ever played the game Codenames, where you're trying to find a connecting word between as many of these words or concepts on the playing field as you can. That is essentially the remote associates test of creativity. And the remote associates test is you're given three words and you have to find another word that goes with all three of them. And so that game is also a version of a creativity assessment.
So when you think about board games or some of the mobile games many of us play today, would you also then say that playing those games repeatedly could help you increase your creativity and not just test your level of creativity?
You know, from my point of view, I think you can get better at creative thinking. So if you practice them regularly, if you practice certain board games, like Codenames or Scattergories, I believe, yes, you can get better at that type of creative thinking.
We're taking a quick break. We'll be right back with Dr. Barry Kudrowitz.
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by TIAA. In the last 100 years, we've seen financial markets swing, new currencies come and go, decades of savings lost in days, all showing that a retirement plan without a guarantee, quite simply, isn't enough. So more than a retirement plan, TIAA makes you a retirement promise, a promise of a guaranteed retirement paycheck for life, a promise that pays off. Learn more at TIAA.org/promisespayoff.
Hi, I'm Tomer Korn, LinkedIn's Chief Product Officer. On my podcast, Building One, we dive deep into what it takes to build great products. Recently, we had Zach Perret, the CEO of Plaid, and he shared about his struggles building a financial app for consumers and how he was able to turn it all around with a critical pivot. Take a listen.
I personally couldn't resonate as much with the consumer set that we were trying to reach. I just didn't have that level of empathy. When we made the shift to building a B2B product, though, I was building the product that I wanted. My co-founder and I were creating the product that we wanted ourselves, and we had so much empathy for what that product was.
Such a great insight.
You know, in that sense, we got lucky because we were creating a thing for ourselves. And then the people that we were talking to also had the same problems we did. They were fintech developers. We'd been a fintech developer. We'd been trying to build a fintech product for a year. And so we had such deep empathy. We had such a clear ability to...
If you want to hear more of Zach Perret's story and the lessons that follow, listen and subscribe to my podcast, Building One.
And we're back with Dr. Barry Kudrowitz. You know, play, humor, fun, often bucketed into the same thing and then often assumed that it's not something we should be doing at work. Or at work, it should be cordoned off to a very specific area or a specific type of meeting. What's maybe a case that you'd make for the reason that play, whether humorous or not, belongs in the workplace?
Yeah, I think this goes back to the very first thing we talked about, where things like play and humor tend to be viewed as for fun or for kids or whimsical or silly, and therefore not things that adults do, and definitely not things that are in serious work environment, right? But if you look at what makes something play, a lot of that still applies to things that you might be doing for a job. So we can be doing a job or, you know, going to the office, and that can still be playful, or there can be elements of play in the work we're doing. One element of play is that you're fully engaged. So this is the concept of flow by Csikszentmihalyi. Mm-hmm. So the challenge has to match your skill set. And that's important for playing a sport. It's important for video games. It's important for board games. And that also applies to anything you do in your job. And so one way of making anything you're doing more like play is by making sure that the challenge better matches your skill set. And if it means you getting better at your skill set or increasing the challenge by taking on more, that's the one thing that you can really control to get yourself to be fully engaged in whatever task you're dealing with. Mm. And this is where we can learn from video games, because video games are so good at this. They know exactly how good you are at any moment in time. So you beat the first level and they're like, oh, okay, this person has that skill set. Let's up the skill set just a little bit to keep them in the state of flow and to keep this activity viewed as play. And they keep doing that. As you build skill sets, the challenges keep increasing. And sometimes in a work environment, that's the element that is missing. Either the challenge is too easy and you're bored, or the challenge is too difficult and you're stressed out. Mm-hmm. And similarly, the challenge might not be able to progress with you.
And that's where I imagine you'd say, you know, I think you mentioned this idea of fun and how, you know, we talk about as adults, that's something children do. But with the relevance of play when it comes to creative thinking,
I think about the juxtaposition of us saying, well, I'm too busy. I don't have the time to play. I have to go be productive. I'm guessing what you'd say to that is like, well, you'd be more productive if you actually prioritize this in certain circumstances.
So some companies are doing this like 10%, 50% time where you can work on whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some value to that. Here in Minnesota, like 3M does that, and you can work on whatever pet projects you have in that time. That's great. But I also think that you can infuse some elements of play in just the things that you have to do. My air quotes are not being shown
but
on
they
the
are air quotes,
audio.
Yeah. But is that air quotes saying that you don't have to do it? Or
well, I think one of the issues with something is by telling people they have to do it makes it not play. That's one of the requirements of play, is that you're doing it because you want to do it. And if you're saying, you need to do this, right? That's working against you finding play in it.
Hmm.
Similarly, like rewards, external rewards also work against play. So, you know, like using bonuses, for example, to reward good behavior or outcome works against play, because then you are doing it for the money or for the praise and not for the activity itself, which is something that makes something play.
Okay, but then, Barry, I have to ask this. Many of us are employed by a company and not by ourselves. So we may feel that sense of like, I don't get to play every day because I work for a company that has goals and has revenue targets and maybe is a publicly traded company, all those things. So we inside of the system of a company are not necessarily able to say, well, you know, of these 10 tasks, I'm not going to do these because I don't want to or because I don't feel playful, or we don't want to absolve ourselves of, you know, desiring a promotion, right, or a bonus. How do we personally work within kind of the confines of the structures we're all in at companies?
Exactly. Like someone has to unload the dishwasher.
Right.
Like you can't be like, well, I'm not going to. But things like unloading the dishwasher can become games or fun. So how can you make something a little bit more interesting or playful if you have some control? So if you can choose what order you do things in or how you do the thing, that's giving you some more control back into something that you didn't necessarily have control. So it allows you to make it a little bit more playful. But there's also finding the fun. There's like two views on this. If you don't view your job or a task as play or fun, like Steve Jobs would say, you should be doing something else.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're only in it for a paycheck, that's fine. But if you're doing it because, you know, you want to do great things and you want to be a creative leader, then you should probably be in a different field if you don't find fun or value in it. The alternative view is Mary Poppins, and she says, you can always find the play in something, right? Like for me, something that I don't particularly like is doing research. If I had to write a paper and I have to go through and find prior literature and then read through it. But the way I gamify that in my mind is I view it like a treasure hunt. And I'm trying to find the most similar work that's out there. And then if I find that one, that has clues in it. And I find the clues and the references, and those lead me to other clues. And I've basically took something that I viewed sort of like the not fun part of academia, and I made it this treasure hunt thing. And so I now enjoy doing the literature reviews for papers.
Yeah, I think I'm more of the Mary Poppins version of this, the idea that we can find play, or as you say, because play is not always humorous, we can find play or challenge in almost anything. And as long as we're willing to engage in it, then we can create something, like you said, that we enjoy from something that we originally said, oh, I don't want to do this thing. This is the one thing that I drag behind and procrastinate on because I just can't stand it.
Yeah. You know, another example of this in academia is sometimes in engineering programs, they use like competition as a way of getting students interested in robotics. And that's fine if you're motivated by competition and you like competing things. But if you really want people to fall in love with robotics, you have to figure out how to make the robotics exciting and not necessarily the winning of a competition.
Mm.
And something here at the University of Minnesota, their robotics class, the students taking the course can make a robot that does whatever they want it to do, as long as it fits in a certain area and you push a button and then it does something. And so they've stripped the competition part away and they've gotten students to be excited about robotics by having them try to create a robot that does something that they're interested in, like sorting cards or cutting cucumbers or whatever.
Right. So it shifts the focus.
Yeah. And makes it a little bit more like play.
What's something recent that you've learned that's been interesting about play?
A lot of animals play. Dogs play, dolphins play, rats play. One of the most interesting ones was seagulls play. And they do this game of dropping clams or oysters to crack them open, right? They fly up high, they pick up a clam, and they drop it on the rocks. And then it breaks open and they get reward, right? But they found that the young seagulls, they would do this activity with open clams, so just clam shells, and they would drop it, and then before it hits the ground, they swoop down and they would catch it. You know, it was basically like play to learn survival skills.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how humans learn things too, through play. We learn emotional skills through play when we're growing up. We learn physical skills, cognitive skills. And I think the problem is somewhere as we're growing up, we say, no, 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 that's not how you're going to learn anymore. We're not going to be playing to learn. We're going to be copying notes off of a board or reading this book, right? That's how you learn right now. We don't learn through play because that's what kids do.
Mm-hmm.
But adults still learn best through play. And so I think that's something that we should embrace more in higher ed and in the workplace environment. We learn best through play.
And it doesn't have to be that we're playing like physically, right? When I think of play in children, I'm thinking of like recess time or building blocks and things like this. It sounds like what you're saying is also just like a video game. It can be something that is engaging you that's on a screen.
Yeah, I mean, play, there's word play. You know, we play with ideas. We can be in the shower and playing through concepts in our head and problem solving. There's this book, Everything Bad is Good for You, is an older book. And it was talking about how things like, you know, we seem to stigmatize video games. And we're like, oh, video games, what are the kids doing, wasting their time with video games? But the argument is like, what if video games came first and books came second, right? And we think about it, in a book, you're kind of just a passive person there and somebody is giving you information and you're just receiving the information.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in a video game, you're interactive and you're problem solving and you're responding to different things in real time and you're developing different skills. Whereas a book is not fully passive, but you know, it's one directional. You're not responding to the book and changing things. So there's an interesting argument on showing how things like video games, which we seem to say are bad for you, might actually have a lot of benefits.
Okay, Barry, I'm going to have you complete these three statements for me. Better humans are?
Better humans are creative.
Better work is?
Better work is enjoyable.
And a better world has?
A better world has more play and humor.
Love it. Thank you so much for joining, Barry. This is great.
Thank you for having me on the show.
That was professor, author, and researcher, Dr. Barry Kudrowitz. If you're interested in diving deeper into play, grab his book, Sparking Creativity: How Play and Humor Fuel Innovation and Design. Here's my thought before we go. Consider how much more enjoyable your daily activities at home or certain tasks at work would be if you incorporated some element of play into them. I often end up adding an element of play to my cleaning routine at home, or I've seen team members start meetings with a question that everyone answered to get into a more playful mood. It's anecdotal, but meetings and work seem to go better when we stop getting so caught up in being business people or busy people that we forget to incorporate playfulness and humanity. If this conversation resonated with you, share it with the first person who comes to mind. You never know how it could help them out. And support other people like you in finding our show by leaving us a rating before you go. While you're at it, write a one-sentence review telling me and the team what you love about Everyday Better. And as always, you can get me in your inbox by signing up for our weekly personal development newsletter, giving you practical tips on how to level up with small steps every day. Find it at linkedin.com/everydaybetter. That's linkedin.com/everydaybetter. Everyday Better is a production of LinkedIn News. The show is produced by Alexis Ramdow. Our associate producer is Grace Rubin. Asaf Gaudron is our sound engineer. He makes sure we sound good in the studio. Joe DiGiorgi mixed our show. Enrique Montalvo is the executive producer of LinkedIn Editorial Productions. Dave Pond is head of news production. Courtney Koop is head of LinkedIn Original Audio and Video. Dan Roth is the editor-in-chief of LinkedIn. And I'm Leah Smart. Thanks for coming with me, and I'll see you next week.